Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We get out of the studio and onto the road to find the kind of radio you don't hear so much anymore. Stories off the beaten path and usually away from the top headlines. We figure the weekend is a good time for that. Time to lean back a little, slow down, meet somebody interesting, hear what people are saying. Of course, when we're not on the radio, you can catch up with us on Facebook. Just search Indiana Weekend. And we'd love to hear your thoughts about the show, your comments, thoughts about whom we might talk with, or where you would like to hear our microphones. Our email address is, conveniently enough, indianaweekend@gmail.com. I'm John Strauss. In another time, maybe, we would have said on the first weekend of December, well, Christmas is just around the corner. What an old-fashioned idea. Just around the corner, the holidays already started. The carols began playing in stores weeks ago. We've already celebrated Black Friday and Cyber Monday, and what else is left? Well, I've got an idea for you. If you want a taste of that old-fashioned Christmas spirit, you might want to meet Rex Zenor in Fortville. Rex is a former home builder who always wanted to retire into farming. Now he's gotten his wish. Specifically, he farms Christmas trees. We drove out to his Piney Acres tree farm on a beautiful sunny weekend afternoon.
We are looking at approximately 50 acres of trees.
How many trees do you get to an acre?
Approximately 1,200.
Can we walk around here and look at this? Tell me what we're looking at here as we're...
Well, the trees that we're walking up right up on are Scotch pine. We planted these in probably 2006.
Is Scotch pine the most popular kind of Christmas tree?
It used to be the number one. I think personally it's kind of not the least favorite. The more favorite are the more fragrant fir trees. The Scotch pine is still a favorite tree, but it's just, changes change or people's likes change. And it just kind of, in 5 years it may go back to the Scotch. But
how long have you been doing this?
Well, I got started because it was a dream, okay? And then the dream just turned into a lot of work. But
Were you in another kind of farming before?
No, I was a home builder, a custom home builder. So this was supposed to be my retirement, and the home building kind of went kapooey. So I just figured, well, now it's time to make the change. So we made the change.
How long ago was that?
We've been planting trees for 10 years. So it was just, the commitment came to the farm when the housing industry just went out. So, and it's been okay. I missed the housing, but hey, can't have everything.
What's the good part about this?
The kids, the commotion inside you've seen when you walk through the store, seeing the kids' eyes and seeing Santa Claus, seeing what Christmas trees represents through our own personal lives, seeing everybody happy. That's what my goal is to make somebody like yourself enjoy what you're supposed to be enjoying, and that's all part of it.
Well, here we are out on the edge of your 50 acres of Christmas trees inside. There's more to it than just coming to get a tree. I mean, it looks like there's things for...
This is an experience. It's a family time. It's time where mom and dad can bring the kids, or even if you don't have kids, can come out and have a little bit of quiet time out here in the fields, something that you normally don't get to do. I mean, you can go out at nightlife and stuff like that, and that's always the same. But this is a once-a-year experience. It usually lasts as long as you want. It can take 15 minutes or it can take 2 or 3 hours. So it's kind of weather-related, too. So.
Weather-related, we had a tough summer. We had a drought around here. How did that affect your trees?
The big trees didn't bother them at all. If I was to tell you I didn't lose any big trees, I'd be lying to you. But it will have a hole, 5 years down the road. But the trees, the bigger ones, they did fine. I mean, their root systems are set.
About how long does it take before a tree's ready to...
Typically 6 to 10 years. They grow anywhere from 8 inches to a foot a year, and sometimes more. It just depends on the ground. So,
What did you have to learn about this that you didn't already know that maybe surprised you? I mean, building houses, technical.
It kind of like it was when I started building houses. I didn't know anything, and I started from the ground up. You know, no pun intended there, but you just have to kind of trial and error. You read the book, you try to apply it, you find out it doesn't work, you have to tweak it, and you just keep on tweaking as you go. I mean, I still learn things, so. I would never consider myself an expert, so.
Well, you're doing something right. I have to tell you, driving here, I don't know how many cars I pass coming from this direction with trees on the top of them, so it seems to be working.
Well, I still say it's all the family experience. This is just a unique time of the year where everybody can get together and just have a good time.
Well, if people haven't done this, and by the way, I never have. We've just bought ours from the, you know, the Boy Scouts in the church lot kind of thing, or at the grocery store. This is a little different. We're out here. Folks will hear the wind on the microphone. We're out here on a farm. You get to walk around these trees.
This is a working farm, yes. So it's just a matter of coming out and having a good time. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to.
What would surprise people? What surprises people when you tell them something about this operation that maybe they didn't know? Oh, by the way, here comes a tractor. What are these folks doing?
These folks have already cut their tree and it's being pulled in. And then, you know, after they get to the stopping where we start processing everything, we'll shake it, bale it, and drill it. And then they go in and get their hot chocolate and their popcorn and, you know, whatever else they may need, and take a rest, and we load it up, and away they go, and hopefully the Colts are winning. So,
I hadn't thought of this before. The folks, tractors has trailers. People are taking pictures of each other as they ride along in the trailer, and there's a sort of a flatbed trailer that I guess the trees will go on.
Correct.
So they don't walk all the way out into the 50 acres.
They can walk and then ride back, but typically they like the wagon ride out and the wagon ride in.
That's so. Part of the experience.
Yeah, we make it easy for them.
Rex Zenor of Fortville, the former home builder, now building a dream in the cultivation of Christmas trees and in the reaction of folks to the special spell induced by the sight and smell of all those pines. I have to admit, I've never gone out to get my own tree like that, but I'll talk to Martha and see if we can take the kids out to one of those places.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line to let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now, here's John Strauss.
A pretty remarkable story in the news the other day. The head of the Indiana State Police told lawmakers he would legalize and tax marijuana if it were up to him. As the AP reports, Indiana State Police Superintendent Paul Weitzel told members of the State Budget Committee on Tuesday that he had followed the issue during 40 years in law enforcement. Weitzel says he believes pot is here and is going to stay. He points to votes in Colorado and Washington allowing adults to have small amounts of marijuana as evidence of a national shift on the issue. At least two Indiana lawmakers may introduce bills in the next General Assembly in January to decriminalize marijuana. All of this, including the election results in Colorado and Washington, are not a surprise for Professor John Getman of Shenandoah University in Virginia. Getman is a marijuana reform activist and former head of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws.
I'm not surprised at all. First of all, the campaigns in Washington and Colorado were extremely professionally run, and they were well-funded. They were well-written proposals, which gave a lot of consideration to what there'd be public support for. And in the broader picture, the last couple of decades, this is a natural evolution of innovation in marijuana policy. And I don't want to diminish the threshold that we've just crossed. The legalization initiatives in those states definitely represent an exciting new twist on marijuana policy reform. But in the big picture, if you go back to this, around the late, this won't take long to go through either, but, you know, late 1960s, early 1970s, people realized that marijuana really wasn't like heroin. And under federal law, it's actually classified the same way. But we have a federal system in this country where you know, most criminal justice issues are addressed through local law enforcement. So the key thing to enforce this national policy of prohibition is the extent that the state and local governments buy into it. And yet the dominant trend since the early 1970s has been states have been opting out. And we've had this take many different forms. We had in the 1970s a wave of states pass what were known as decriminalization measures, where marijuana possession, small amounts, would be punished by small fines and in many cases a ticket or a minor court summons. We then had a wave in the late 90s of states that established medical marijuana laws, and they opened up a new category where individuals using marijuana for some kind of medical purpose were no longer categorized as criminals. Throughout the whole 20, 30 years since the 70s, we've had states that they've used prosecutorial discretion, they've used alternative sentencing options where no matter what the statutory penalties were, many marijuana possession offenses were punished by a fine and by probation or by a suspended sentence or something along those lines. So states have been opting out either formally or informally over the last 30 years. That's been an ongoing and continual and progressive trend. Then we had these medical marijuana laws, and we had these dispensary programs set up where marijuana was actually sold retail, over-the-counter, in public, in commercial establishments in Colorado and in California, albeit with some reasonable restrictions to certify legitimate medical use. So then looking at these new laws that have been passed in Washington and Colorado, they're just sort of the next step forward in this whole process.
What do those laws actually say to review that?
I'm not familiar with the exact precise details of the schemes in both states, but both roughly follow the alcohol model that's used in many states. And in Washington, for example, each step of the process from cultivation to preparing a product for sale to retail sales has a specific tax associated with it, and there's state licenses that are required. And there's a similar setup in Colorado insofar as it's a license regulated and perhaps the most important word here is taxed procedure. And so in both cases, you move much more of this formerly illicit industry into a legal regulated market in a fashion that takes money out of the hands of criminals and away from, say, foreign cartels. But more importantly, produces tax revenue for both states and by implication also for local jurisdictions.
Yeah, I think I saw some coverage about the system in Colorado, like a million square foot former warehouse or something outside of Denver, with the idea being that this is a safer product maybe than what people were getting brought in through other means.
Well, there is a safety issue involved, although frankly, I would say it's a minor aspect of all of this. The real benefit is taking the money away from the illegal market, and also part of that, also in terms of a benefit to public finance, if you will, is allowing police departments to reallocate resources that have been used for marijuana possession arrests and to apply them to other areas. And for example, in Indiana, the last 10 years has been an average of about 14,500 marijuana possession arrests per year. And regardless of how someone calculates the cost of that, and frankly, I'm working on a study with some of my colleagues that will address those figures for Indiana. We'll have that available sometime this year. But it's police officers off the street. It's court resources of keeping a file and tracking all this, and prosecutors having these cases cross their desks and having to spend time on plea bargains. It does take up some resources.
Professor John Getman of Shenandoah University on the new talk about marijuana laws around the country. Indiana may have two lawmakers in the next session that starts in January who offer decriminalization bills. That mood, if it grows, could mirror what we saw in the November elections in Colorado and Washington.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
upset about agritourism. Regular agriculture brings in about $25 billion to the state's economy through farm, food, and forestry products each year. But another crop is growing. The crowds of people headed out to the hayrides and strawberry picking expeditions, the tours, the visits with the animals, the country-style tourism increasingly popular in our increasingly urbanized culture. One example of farm-based adventure we're looking at this week, just in time for the holidays, of course, those Christmas tree farms where you walk through the fields, pick out just the right tree, breathe in the fragrance of evergreens still in the ground, you know, all that stuff. And we found Rex Zenor and his Piney Acres Christmas Tree Farm in Fortville. You can find him right there in Google. Rex took a break when we visited the other day. You know, the first question I had, how do you pick a good tree?
When we first got started, you know, I would actually remove a tree because it was not look good. And then after that, I would see people choosing trees that...
That you would have removed.
That I would have removed. And I said, well, I've been making a mistake, another mistake. So I, regardless of what they look like, as long as they resemble, you know, the Christmas tree traditional shape, we leave it because... Everybody's different.
It might be somebody to somebody's taste.
That's right. That's right.
And the different kinds are, we're standing here among Scotch pines.
That's
okay.
Correct.
And then you also have, what are some of the other kinds?
We've got white pine, Douglas fir, Canaan fir, white fir, which is a concolor fir, blue spruce, Norway spruce. We've got Nordman's coming online. We got Norway's. Well, maybe I said Norway's. So we got about 10 different kinds.
So who is your competition? Do they bring trees? Do they ship trees from other parts of the country? Or?
Well, these trees over here in the pre-cut lot are all shipped in.
Okay.
We've got trees that come from Washington State. That's across, you know, that's on the Pacific Ocean. And then we've
That Washington State. That's a long way.
And then we've got the Frasers, which come from North Carolina.
Okay.
And that's the only trees that we bring in. Those are just species that we can't grow here, and people like them, and they buy them here. You can get Frasers just about anywhere, but you can't get Nobles anywhere.
Does Indiana export trees? Do people in other parts of the country, hey, I want an Indiana tree?
Some of the farms do. That's on the wholesale side, and we don't wholesale here, so everything's retail.
What do you do on December 26th?
Sleep. No, I actually start getting ready for the next year, simply because if I don't, it's January and I keep procrastinating, and then it's March, and because I've got pumpkins to plant for the fall and get ready for the fall, it's a full year-round type job.
There is a thing that happens now with agriculture, with farming.
It's called agritourism. That's exactly right.
Did you ever think you would be doing that?
20 years ago? No. 10 years ago, it was where I was wanting to go, and one thing leads into another. You know, the trees, you know, trying to sell more trees, we wanted to try to bring more people to the farm. So we started our pumpkin patch, and the pumpkin patch turned into a corn maze. Corn maze led to hay rides. Hay rides lead to other things. And we just have grown that way. And of course, the more people come out and buy pumpkins, they didn't know we had a tree farm, and they see the trees. Hopefully they come back for the tree. So it's kind of a win-win for both myself and them. They know where it goes. They know me. They know it's fresh. They know it's not, you know, who knows where it comes from, that kind of thing. So it's kind of a relationship.
So there was a time when you were a six-year-old boy and you got a ride on a tractor. Changed your life.
Yeah. And, of course, through that process, you know, high school got in the way and my life got in the way of the dream that I didn't know was my dream until later on. And just one step at a time, and you just got to go for it. So, and that's what I did. And I was just lucky enough, you know, to have my remodel and home building business, and that sustained this, and we're still probably not in the black, but, you know, we're getting there. And, you know, it's just one step at a time.
Did this kind of start on the side? You had your home business and this was on the side and kind of the fun thing that...
This was the retirement. This was where I was going to retire and not have to work. Well, it's actually more work than building homes. But, you know, what really motivated me was when I had gotten custody of my oldest daughter. We were standing on a corner lot like everybody does in Indianapolis. And... Christmas has always been super, super special. through my life, and standing there with my daughter, I just looked around and I said, I got to do this. It's just what I want to do. A few more years got in my way of my, you know, dream, and then when I turned 50, I decided, you know, if we don't do it now, it ain't going to happen. So we made the commitment to get out here, and here we go, you know, 10 years later.
Rex Zenor of Fortville, from the edge of the trees where we talked at his Piney Acres Christmas tree farm. You can look them up online. I don't know about you, but I really like talking to people about their dreams, staying on track to make that stuff happen. Besides that, though, the Christmas tree farm seems like a fun place, families getting out, walking among the pines. For all the weeks of cold and snow we endure, it's nice to know there's something fun like this we can still do before the cold winds of December really get here.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.
It's the most wonderful time. Yes, the most wonderful time. Oh, the most wonderful time of the year.
Well, that's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Marcus Jackman. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a comment or suggestion. Reminder that we also need your stories, your ideas for places we should go, and people we should talk to. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio, I'm John Strauss.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss of the Ball State Journalism Department. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Marcus Jackman. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture, Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.
Dad, didn't they invent Christmas tree lights so people wouldn't have to drive all the way out to nowhere and waste a whole Saturday?
They invented them, Russ, because people forgot how to have a fun, old-fashioned family Christmas and are satisfied with scrawny, dead, overpriced trees that have no special meaning.
My toes are numb.
You see, kids, this is what our forefathers did.
I can't feel my leg.
They walked out into the woods, they picked out that special tree, and they cut it down with their bare hands.
Mom, I can't feel my hips.
Clark.
Yes, honey?
Audrey's frozen from the waist down.
That's all part of the experience, honey.
What's the good part about this?
The kids, the commotion inside you've seen when you walk through the store, seeing the kids' eyes and seeing Santa Claus, seeing what Christmas trees represent through our own personal lives, seeing everybody happy. That's what my goal is to make somebody like yourself enjoy what you're supposed to be enjoying.